Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and ladies and gentlemen. He told you that I was here to substitute for our great Dr. D.J. Palmer. The very beginning, let me tell you, there is no such animal. Nobody can take the place of that distinguished gentleman. But however, in that he's not among us, I'm going to try to fish it as best I can and bring before you some thoughts that I believe are worthy of your attention, just and serious consideration, and also action. It also dawned on me as I was coming over here, ladies and gentlemen, that you have great reasons to be very proud of your great country here. I don't know whether you realize it or not, but Canada is the place where Dr. Daniel Davis Palmer first saw the light of day. And he happens to be the foremost benefactor of the present day and days way beyond that. Dr. David D.D. Palmer discovered chiropractic, the answer to the problem that has confronted the countless millions of sick throughout the world. Rather strange, too, the way he discovered it. Being of an analytical mind, he and his study of anatomy and also ministering to the sick recognized somehow that there was a missing link. Patients that came to him had tried many other methods of healing, didn't get well, tried these other methods and tried his method and also met with defeat, as it were, failure. And he wondered just what was missing, what was wrong. And one day, during the course of his studies and observation, he heard of a Negro janitor in the building in which he had an office, becoming deaf after he had fallen down an elevator shaft.
This thing I have never seen.
Dr. Palmer thought he might be a good man to test out a theory that he had. And he brought this gentleman into his office, gave a very careful examination, and discovered that there was a peculiar lump, a bump, as it were, that appeared in the back of this patient's neck right after the fall down the elevator shaft. And from that time on, this patient was deaf. Again, because of Dr. Palmer's analytical mind and careful study, he observed that that bump in the patient's neck happened to be a small bone, one of the vertebrae that make up the spinal column. And that small bone was misaligned, out of place. But of course, what to do about it was another problem. So in the course of his palpation, squeezing it, feeling it, suddenly there was a pop. And as he heard the pop, the bump disappeared. And a miracle, seemingly, was performed. Hearing was restored to his patient. Well, you can imagine, Dr. Palmer, the many hours that he spent in study after that to theorize just what had happened. But he, like our great Benjamin Franklin, they tell the story of him, that he too was an inquisitive mind, wondered about these lightning storms and the like, the power that was behind them. And they tell the story that he took a kite, and on the tail of the kite, he attached a key. Raising his kite, in one of these electric storms, suddenly he began to notice some electric shocks in his fingers. And lo and behold, electricity was born. Electricity was discovered. But when he discovered this great power used all over the world today, he certainly did not see the many things that happened from that day on out. He could not visualize this microphone, the radio, or this recording instrument. He did not see the electric light. He did not see the marvelous instrument, that stratoliner that brought me into New York, from New York into Seattle, Washington, from just in one day's time. In fact, 11 some odd hours, to be exact. He did not see the modern convenience we had in our refrigeration, in our vacuum cleaner. He did not see the automobile. He did not see the submarine. He saw none of those things, yet they were all there in that little spot that he got, eliminated from the tail of his pipe. Like D.C. Palmer. He did not see in that bump in the patient's spine the answer of all disease known to mankind. He could not visualize a cure for tuberculosis, a cure for the lame, the blind, stomach trouble, kidney trouble, heart trouble, all the troubles confronting mankind. He didn't see it, and yet it was there. It was only after, years later, when both he and his illustrious son began to recognize the full and complete power that was discovered. That power, ladies and gentlemen, is life itself. They recognize that life, the power that animates the human body, that takes the material of which the body is composed of, animates it with the intelligence to build itself from a tiny microscopic size cell to all of that human body can develop to. Remove it from the body and everything ceases to function and disintegration takes place. They further recognize that that power emanating from the brain is transmitted across the nervous system. Coming from the brain through the spinal cord. And from the spinal cord across to all the nerves that reach every tissue cell. They recognize the fact that the spinal cord being housed by this bony shaft, the spinal column, which is composed of the 24 movable vertebrae, that when a vertebra became out of alignment, pressure was produced on the nerve, and as a result, the power which animates the body was shut off. Depending upon the degree of interference as to what effect would result. That, ladies and gentlemen, was the thought, the philosophy, the truth behind the profession that grew from the mind of one man to where it's practiced in every civilized country in the world. That was the great discovery that today has turned sadness into happiness and gladness in millions of homes. It didn't only do that. Mind you, and get these vital points. It, I say, was just an idea in one man's mind. Now, as these patients came to Dr. Palmer, with their so-called incurable disease, he was interested not in the symptoms any longer, but he was interested in bumps along the spinal column. That's what he looked for. And wherever he found one, he reduced it to normalcy. And invariably, unless the damage to the tissues involved was too great, that patient responded and was restored to health. And these, mind you, were again the saviors of other methods of healing. Naturally, as that practice grew larger and larger, they recognized the fact that, as the Palmers did, that they alone could not take care of the welfare of the sick of the world. And so, the first chiropractic school was founded. Their students comprised, in the main, of their patients that were being restored to health. Patients that came from all parts of the country, came into Davenport to meet these so-called miracle men, and there, while under their care, they were taught the philosophy and the art of applying that philosophy to other people. They were our pioneer chiropractors. They went out to the highways and byways, and soon they were recognized for performing seemingly miracles. And from there on, the idea grew on and on and on, always being given the most severe test by being called upon to make the sick well that could not be made well anywhere else, that were looked upon as saviors. Well, now, of course, that was a very large order, and everything went along very smoothly. Chiropractic was enjoying a very rapid growth. Why, soon, students by the hundreds were coming into Iowa and studying. And by the hundreds, they were going out, and more hundreds would come in, until finally there were thousands at that school. And soon other schools sprang up. And then, lo and behold, something happened. And mind you, what I say now, I'm not saying in criticism of any other method of healing, nor am I saying one word of criticism against the gentleman practicing medicine. Those gentlemen, I have learned through my experience, are just as honest and sincere in their endeavors as any chiropractor or any other representative of the healing world. But that they are given the wrong conception as to the cause and cure of disease, chiropractic has proven that beyond all question about. However, behind this great medical profession, there is a very powerful and seriously money-minded empire, the Allied Drug Interest. Now, chiropractors do not employ drugs, nor do they employ adjuncts, just their hands. And not employing drugs and inviting more and more and more followers, it was soon recognized by the powerful drug interests that a serious inroad was being made into the financial corpus of this great empire. And they said something must be done to stop it. And then a, so to speak, cold war was declared. A cold war of undermining the confidence of the people in chiropractic and chiropractors. All forms of vilification, criticism, condemnation were then broadcast through every avenue of reaching the people, through the press, through magazines, over the radio, television, any means at all humanly possible, it was used to advance the so-called great discoveries and new wonder drugs, the so-called efficacies of their new serums, and the ridiculousness and absurdness of chiropractic. Yes, chiropractors were arrested and sent to jail for practicing medicine, as they said, without a license. Those great pioneers fought that way all the way along. And just in that connection, I can't help but congratulate the wisdom on the part of your legislators and your men and women of this great part of the country, where you have seen fit to enact laws that gave the public a protection to a decent degree, where you can go to your chiropractor without asking him to jeopardize his liberty. I wish that were true all over the world. Nevertheless, these pioneers haven't stopped. They are working today. They recognize the fact that this is a Herculean job to familiarize the people of the world to the true cause of disease. Consequently, as a result of it, I am here to play my part. More, however, at the request of laymen who find this condition far more serious than we do here in these parts because they lack the freedom that you do here. I have been more or less their emissary, and I'm glad to bring the message to wherever it is humanly possible for me to bring. Now, just to justify our deep concern in chiropractic, I want to delve into, in a sort of a layman's language, and in a brief way, in the philosophy of chiropractic. Dr. David Palmer and his son, B.J. Palmer, recognized the fact that with the pressure on the nerves, it interfered with the normal transmission of mental impulses from brain cells to tissue cells. Keep that in your mind. But what does it mean? Ladies and gentlemen, it just means this. There is a universal law emanating from the universal power of all creation that's responsible for all living things. That is the builder of all living things. It is the same power that controls the stars, the moon, the sun, your time, your season, the power of taking care of all the leaves on your tree, responsible for all these things, knowing the natural world. To further illustrate of its intelligence, let me remind you that, for instance, if you were to take a homing pigeon on board a ship out on a high sea far beyond the sight of land, and there, miles, hundreds of miles offshore, you take that pigeon and throw him to the wind. He will circle that ship. Once he circled it, he makes one straight line right back from whence he came. Who showed him what highway to take? Who showed him the road back home? Where were his markers to say, take this road, turn left here, turn right there? Where was his traffic agency? Where was his conference? How did he know how to get back home? The power that instilled that intelligence in that pigeon is the power responsible for the intelligence right in your body this very moment that is performing a miracle that has not at this time or never will be performed by man in his chemical laboratory. Right now, you people, at least I hope you did, have your dinner. No doubt it was enjoyed. All you recall is that you sat there, masticated it, chewed it, swallowed it, and now it's forgotten. You don't stop to think that what you've had tonight for your dinner will be out walking and talking tomorrow. There is a transition taking place. Common, ordinary food, within just a short period of time, changed into living flesh and blood. Can you know of any scientist in the world that can go in his chemical laboratory and imitate that sort of a job? I'm thinking right now of a blade of grass, countless billions of them all over the universe. The lawn out here looks beautiful. We just look at it, pass it by, and that's all. We take it for granted. Yes, our scientist can take a blade of that grass and bring it into his laboratory, tear it apart chemically, tell you what the chemical constituents are, and after he's all through, ask him, now that you know, doctor, will you go out and get those chemicals and build for me a blade of grass? Absolutely impossible. The only power can grease and build a blade of grass is the power within that blade of grass. The chiropractor recognizes that truth. He honors it and observes it. If he walks along and he sees a blade of grass, and he wants that blade of grass to live, and if it doesn't look healthy, he will possibly find a little stone pressing on the side of that blade of grass. And it was under the pressure of that stone on it, it begins to change color, wither, and die. He knows he can't make grass. He's not interested what grass is composed of. But he can take that little stone, and you have done likewise, kick it aside, and the power within rebuilds the plate of grass. I often wonder where our great scientists get their ego from when they try to tell us in their learned way all of what they know about the human body. Let us dream for a moment and see what you know about it. Once upon a time, each and every one of you people were so small that you couldn't even compare in size with the seed of a blade of grass. Do you know that? Of course you do. You were so insignificantly small at one time that you would have to be, well, use a most powerful microscope to be recognized. Yet there you are. Right there in that tiny little substance, you had everything that your body is composed of today. You and your little environment, knowing nothing about this world as before you entered this world, call upon your mother for the material that you needed to further develop yourself. Mother, of course, unfortunately, she didn't know she was in communication with you or that you were in communication with her. But she was just the same. Let me prove it to you by some of our past experiences that we have learned about. Early one morning, at the ungodly hour of 3 o'clock of a cold winter's morning, when grapefruit was out of season, there wasn't a grapefruit that he had, Mama awakened. She got steady. She says, John, I'm just dying for some grapefruit. I've got to have it. Oh, my gosh. Why, 3 o'clock in the morning. So y'all go to sleep. No, no, I can't go to sleep. I've got to have grapefruit. I want grapefruit. I'm good. Oh, so he's old. Gee, yes, why, I've got to watch my steps to you in that condition. Why? Well, you can't cross her. So out he gets, and he goes to friends and neighbors and anywhere, get a hold of that grapefruit. I gotta have a grapefruit. Mary wants it. And he gets home with the grapefruit. Whoa, that grapefruit was so good. What was Mama doing? I'll tell you. That little fellow that was building his body needed certain chemicals that he, through the intuition and intelligence of his mother, knew was in grapefruit. So that the intense desire of grapefruit was built, that he had to have grapefruit, so he got the material necessary to build the particular part that he was building at that time. That's how that communication goes on. And now, while we proceed with it, we will recognize that this little body now built a pair of eyes and placed those eyes just exactly where they belong. Never making a mistake. Don't put one here and one there. Or one here and one down here. Right where they belong. Arrange the skull, every part of it, just so it fits. They're suddenly perfect. Without a blueprint. Never went to school. Doesn't know anything about anatomy. Yet this, those pair of eyes that, well, have outdone the finest camera man has ever tried to produce. Think of the camera that those eyes are, snapping that picture, perfectly in focus. Take a print of it, filing it back here. Close your eyes. Say, oh, gee, yes, I do remember the little schoolhouse I used to go to 20 years ago. Oh, I remember this and that. Going back to that metal file, getting the pictures taken by those little instruments. Biff. By this little so-called unknown somebody. Why, it's just that. To the nose, ears, mouth. Constant, by the way. Yeah, it's not those. Put them there for a reason, too. Oh, we don't think they're of any good. But at that time, we thought they were good, so we built them. We put them there. Throat, heart, liver, lungs, spleen, kidneys. Yes, every tissue cell that has even at this very moment, no living man knows anything about. There are certain parts of the body that are just mysterious that men learn it at outstanding education today as they were since the beginning of time. And yet, this little body that has entered the world seemingly knew all about it because it built them. And built them for a purpose. Yes, also put an appendix there. Silly little fool. After 280 days of that kind of program, after 280 days just saying, Mommy, go on out and eat some more junk. Oh, yes, the Italian mommy, she ate spaghetti, and he had to make heart liver lungs out of spaghetti. The German mother ate pork and sauerkraut, and he had to make heart, liver, lungs, and spleen, kidneys out of pork and sauerkraut. And the Irishman, of course, out of corned beef and cabbage. 3 hours of what they eat, hot and Eskimo raw fish, up there and way up in Alaska. But yes, Eskimos, hang out, I just saw a picture of eating raw fish. And it's Heinemann, doing the same kind of a job, and it's just plain right. Think of it. Who could ever see in a head full of rice all the things that the human body is composed of? And guess how intelligently that job is done. Let me remind you again, everything in perfect order. No wonder we have no trouble going to school to find out where the heart is. I went to school and found out where the liver was one time and I forgot the shit. I do remember it's on the inside. But what side, I just forgot about that. But this little fellow never forget. It is always put in the right spot. The pancreas, all the other particular glands, endocrines, the ductless glands and the like, all things which man knows something about, every part right there and doing its job. Oh, what an intelligent operation. And then, ladies and gentlemen, the final day has arrived. Graduation. Mom, I want to get out. Everything's all set, Mom. Come on, let's go. Yes, and pretty smart he was. When he was living in his little house for himself, he knew that he had a tender body. He knew he had to be well protected. So he had built for himself a little reservoir there of fluid. It's called amniotic fluid. And in that, he used to float around in there. Thought that was his shock absorber. So when Daddy got home and pushed one of those that hard, he wouldn't be bumped too heavily. He could just ease his way across. A pneumatic shock absorber. We're bragging about it because we have one on our cars. sent him away back then, or when. And, of course, aside from that, he knew that perhaps he had heard or was suspicious of the rough world he was getting into. So he says, I'll use this floor to slide my way in. You've heard of these remarks? Oh, yes, the water broke. See? And then the baby came. You ready for that? All right. So, baby comes into the world. Oh, what a certain something takes place in that home. Oh, there's a certain emotion that takes full charge of the heart and being of that mother. And daddy looks at it. He can't speak. There's something in here that's hot. Now there's somebody else in our home. What does it mean? Oh, it means this. If necessary, yes, they'll fight the whole world. They'll sacrifice the very life. Save the life of that offspring. There are a million kids out there. Oh, they're all cute. But this one, oh, no one can harm it. Again, natural law. Telling parents, take care of that young. Well, the baby's only here just a short time, and of course, pretty soon, he recognized that the fact that he wants to grow, and he knows that he needs material to keep on building himself. And lo and behold, without asking any questions, without knowing of any language, he goes right to the cafeteria where he knows he'll get that food. He seems to know. How does he know? Who told him so? He knows. And you're not going to set him up either. Talk about that common phrase, I'll give you a butt in the mouth. That means something. Yes, ladies and gentlemen. I tried to put this over a little, on the comedy side, but what a dramatic and holy truth it is. If only we had the wisdom and the judgment to, from that time on, to continue to respect the intelligence that built us, that placed us into this world. But unfortunately, up until that time, that child is neither Chinaman, nor is it a Mexican, is it a Yankee or a Canadian or an Englishman, German or Irishman. It just is, that's all. At that particular time, it's neither Jew nor Gentile, Catholic or Protestant. It just is, that's all. But man sort of takes over. And man says, all right, I'm going to make this out of you, and I'll make that out of you. Now man is going to begin to handle the job. And most unfortunately, we have been erroneously taught, without giving any thought to the power that put this marvelous instrument of life into our lives, we have been taught that we can improve upon that job. And innocently we take that child, say, I don't want to have anything happen to it. Doctor, will you be good enough to immunize my child against diphtheria by injecting serum into his blood? Doctor, will you be good enough to protect my child against whooping cough, diphtheria? Will you please vaccinate my child so he doesn't get smallpox? Oh, what an insult, what a travesty. And the beauty of all creation, what a mockery it is, the great and unknown power, the giver of life. Surely if there was anything needed, that little body would have been placed there. There is nothing superfluous. Let me impress you with that truth. There is nothing superfluous in the human body, nor is there anything lacking in that human body. That human body is built right to the full and complete specifications of the giver of life. We wouldn't mind that so much if it wasn't for the deleterious effects that follow through. Not saying that everybody that's been injected with vaccine serums and the like, that they're going to die a torturous death. Not saying that. That again will depend on how well the life in your body can go from brain cell to tissue cell as to how well that power can throw off the toxic effect of man's interference. If there is a pressure on the nerve and the body is functioning below par, then man's interference will pay its full price for interfering, and you're headed onward for a life of misery, a life of disease, and a premature death. I can substantiate that a little bit by asking you tonight when you get home to look up that scar that you have on your body when you were vaccinated. It's been there for years. It will remain just as long as you remain. Skin is considered one of the toughest tissues of the human body. I can take my hand, continue doing this. The power within me, within reason, will adapt my hand to this irritation. I will grow calluses on my hand. Calluses to such an extent, and if I continue doing this, I will wear out this table, but I will never wear out this hand. Clear? That's how tough the skin is, and how the intelligence within your body will adapt itself to irritation. That skin of yours today, that toughened material that you can't wear out, has got that scar there. If that toxic material can injure the skin, the toughened material, to that extent, what is it doing to the delicate tissues of your body when it enters the bloodstream? The giver of life arranged your body in such a way that nothing should enter your body, only that which goes through the natural processes of digestion. Eat your sandwich, chew it well, forget about it. Then it goes down to your chemical laboratory, and again I repeat, the transition takes place. You should not, and you cannot, without the penalty of all depends, violate that law by introducing far matter into your bloodstream and get away with it. You will be called upon to pay that price. You cannot bypass God's laboratory. You can't ignore it. You can't deny it. Because when you do, you're violating a law that is just. A law that is unpardonable in its decision. You must pay the price. I say that and pass that on to you merely as food for thought. Now, it was this great philosophy on the part of the members of the chiropractic profession. With that in mind, when the patient calls upon, then they see but one thing. That power of wisdom, the creator of life, is shut off. It is not getting across those nerves. He will tell you in honesty so that he cannot make you well. No living man can make your body well. You alone can do that. But he can remove the interference with the power in you so that it can get through to make you well. Don't let any other practitioner of any other method of healing tell you that he can make you well. This salve is good. It will cure men that it's going to cure you. Is it? Well, let me have the dead body, Doctor. Now, put a sight in there and then apply that sand. Keep on applying it and see where that cut will heal. Does the sand do the healing? Of course not. The healer of that body is now gone. And the body is going to decay. The best we can do is to employ hygiene, keeping it clean, and give that power at least a chance to heal it as fast as it can. But men cannot do the healing. Now, of course, that may bring up the question. Now, wait a minute, Doctor. You spoke about not being immunized, not being vaccinated. How about smallpox? How about these so-called contagious diseases? Well, I like to give credit where credit is due. And you can give that credit to your sanitary engineers. We got, in the main, these so-called contagious diseases because of living in filth or having a filthy body. When I say filthy, I mean filthy internally. Due to accumulation of toxins in your body, and then having those toxins irritated by some foreign toxin that you may have introduced in your body, not knowing anything about it. As an illustration, it's only yesteryear we had the well here and the back house there because it was so handy of a cold night. Why build that back house way up there? There might be 4 or 5 feet of snow below zero weather. It isn't handy. Built it here. So it was built there and the well was wrong side of it. Naturally, this filth at the back house got found its way to the well. And you spoke of the fine drinking water you had. And then you had a good body, you got away with it. The only time you didn't get away with it, when there was a pressure on the nerve, and life didn't get through to tolerate the foreign toxin that was put in there. You say, oh, how terrible. How could anybody think of having a well right alongside of a back house? How careless. Oh, it couldn't be so. Nobody could be that careless. Well, skip it. Tell me, have you taken your child over to the doctor and had it immunized? Oh, no, not yet. Well, you better right away. Oh, so you wouldn't drink the filth coming from the pack house, would you? Where did your vaccine come from? Hmm? What is your vaccine? Vaccine is made by introducing the toxins of syphilis, if you please, into poor, innocent cow's pure, clean blood. That is introduced into that blood to such an extent until that blood is entirely and completely intoxicated, and the next thing you see, the cow drooping, saliva coming from its mouth, and liquid from its nose. It's running a high temperature. It continues to, is wobbling, can't hardly walk, can't hardly stand anymore. And then pus bags begin to break out on the udders. When these pus bags break out of through the udders, that pus is scraped off. Scraped off. Put into vials, into blood, mixed along with the blood, allowed to deteriorate longer, and now it's good serum. To keep away smallpox. Oh, you wouldn't eat drink that water near the back house. But you did. Oh, how terrible you wouldn't do that today. Not too long ago, I recall a chiropractor tending a patient. This patient had pneumonia. And even the wonder drug didn't work. So the doctor became desperate. And he says, I know what to do now. I'm working on a new serum. And he did make up a new serum. He took a specimen of that patient's bowel movement, took it to his laboratory, made a serum out of it, and injected it into that patient's blood. Don't cross again, I say. He didn't have to eat it, and it didn't taste too bad going through the blood. The effect. Cleaning effect. Do germs cause the disease? What does germ mean? What is the definition of germ? The definition of germ, ladies and gentlemen, is life. We can't defy life. It's just a living thing, so they call it a germ. A germ is a scavenger. You know what a maggot is? Of course you've seen them. A maggot is a germ. I can take a maggot, place it on the palm of my hand, and keep him there. Don't let him get off. He'll die. He'll starve to death. There's nothing for him to feed on. But I can cut my hand off and lay it here and put that germ there. And now that life is gone from that hen, you would be surprised how many relatives that germ will have in just a very short time chewing up that hen. You see? Another illustration. We go to the dirty garbage pail on a hot summer's day. We see it littered with flies. Just filled with them. The neighbor next door has got a brand new garbage pail. Hasn't been used yet. There isn't a fly around that pail. Did the flies cause the pail to get dirty? Or did the dirty pail cause the flies? Which is the truth? Why doesn't a clean garbage pail produce flies? It's the filth. And that garbage pail that attracts the flies the scavenger, and they clean up the filth. And you can go a step further. Tonight when you get home, you take a piece of cotton, a piece of thread, run it through your fingers. If you have a friend that has a microscope, take that piece of cotton and put it under the microscope. And if you ever want to see a three-ring circus, you'll see it. Typhoid germ, tubercular germ, pneumococcus, and all the other coccus germs that they have, piled one on top of the other, going through all kinds of stunts. What's wrong? Why are they there? They are scavengers. And if your body is in health, they cannot destroy your body. You will destroy them. When your body is diseased, then the germs appear and eat up the diseased tissue and, of course, are blamed for causing the diseased tissue. Is the diseased tissue just the reverse? It's causing the germ. That fact is also substantiated. By a patient gets typhoid fever, for instance, they don't know right away, but they wait until the incubation stage is over. Incubation means to hatch. Now that the incubation stage is over, we find some typhoid germs. But after about 28 days, that body is literally covered with them. That is the inside of it. But the patient gets well. One patient made him sick, and a million made him well. The patient, the disease rather, produced the germ. The germ did not produce the disease. So we can go on and on as far as disease being caused by germs. Disease has one common cause. A body that isn't functioning normal. And a body isn't functioning normal only when the power within it can't get through to make it work. Refer to substantiate that remark. We hear of a patient suffering, let us say, of liver trouble. He goes to the doctor and he has a very thorough examination. After the very thorough examination, the doctor decides that his body in general is in very good shape. The patient will say, "Good doctor, how's my heart?" "Oh, boy, that heart is a score of powerful elements.
going for just as long as your liver can hold out or any other part of your body. How do you find my lungs? Oh, the lungs are normal. The stomach is normal. The kidneys are normal. You're normal in every way. Yes, your arteries, your veins, everything is all right. But that liver is bad. I find that you're suffering with what is known as... Well, I begin to think it's sort of hardening there. Maybe a touch of sclerosis of the liver. And aside from that, we find that you have some gallstones. Gallstones are stones in the bladder of the liver, in the bile, in the reservoir, where the bile is kept. So you have some stones there, but we can perform an operation and remove the gallbladder, and of course, then you'll be won't have any more trouble with the gallstones. Mm-hmm. And how about the other part of the liver? Well, we'll give you some medication for that. That ought to be all right. Well, the patient goes through with it. Never asking the question. Say, doctor, did you say my heart was normal? You told me every other part of my body was normal? What is it that's keeping all these other parts normal and this part is sick? Why is it that this part isn't just as well as all these normal parts? You never ask that question. You should. But assuming that we forget about that for the time being, you undergo the operation. Now watch this very carefully. The only time a patient can have gallstones is when the liver isn't functioning normally. The liver manufactures a certain type of secretion made up of a number of different chemical elements which it extracts from the blood. These secretions now, due to a faulty functioning liver, are of an abnormal consistency. Consequently, when they get down into the liver, they form crystals. Down to the gallbladder, up. They crystals are formed. One crystal adheres to the next, and pretty soon we have a stone. Now the liver plays a very important part in your life and your digestion in the preparation of the material that's supposed to go into your bloodstream to all the cells of the human body. But we won't think of that for the time being, or we're just about getting rid of the stone. So we have the operation, the gallbladder is removed, you don't have any more of these liver attacks or gallbladder attacks, and oh, you're feeling fine. You are. But what is that digestive tract doing now for its necessary normal amount of bile? Here's how that apparatus works. Assuming you eat a certain type of food, and it needs a certain amount of this particular element to break this food down. Normally and naturally and most intelligently, that gallbladder will contract and send forth just the normal amount of bile. Just the exact amount that it may need to tear down the material that you are trying to digest. Not too much, just enough. But now the bladder is gone. And so, of course, the food isn't being digested, and the next thing will happen that you're going to try to do that artificially. So you're taking a pill before meals or a pill after meals. One pill, whether you eat 1 pound of steak or whether you eat just a small plate of beans. There is no continuity as to the amount. As time goes on, the liver bile, which still is of an abnormal consistency that should be used for normal digestion, circulates the blood, gets through the bloodstream entirely, and as a result, the arteries harden. And over a period of years, 5, 10, 15 years, you're back to the doctor with a new symptom, and he checks over your blood pressure and says, well, you have a very high blood pressure. Why do I have a high blood pressure, doctor? Well, your arteries are hard. Why are they hard? Oh, they just get hard. Well, they don't just get hard. They got hard because of the toxic material in that blood. And now that they're hard, they cannot relax and contract anymore, and the blood is forced through, and the pressure is high. Oh, yes, they give you medicines that may check the heart action to a degree, lower that blood pressure, temporarily, of course, and finally, of course, you're told, now, don't eat any more meat. You'll put on a strict diet. Don't do this. Don't do the next thing. Don't do the next thing. And you're restricting yourself of all of these things with your dose. And again, you're feeling all right. And you're posting them to your friends, the fine doctor you've been to, and how much better you feel. Of course, you say, I'm not allowed to do the same kind of work I used to do. And I'm not allowed to eat red meat. And I'm not allowed to do this. You think of all of these things that you're not allowed to do. But you're happy and satisfied. Just so long as it's your body. But let me see how you would act about something else. You have your automobile. And your automobile isn't working, taking hills as it should. It sits and backfires and just stalls and doesn't do its normal work. And you take it to the garage. And the mechanic looks it over and he says, I'll test it out. And he takes it on the road and he says, well, I'll find it. That only happens when you take hills. When you're on a level road, your car runs all right. But of course, when you take hills, I notice it sits and backfires and stalls. So I tell you what you do from now on. You keep away from those hills and just take level roads. You say, what? You want to get paid for this? And that's just a material machine. Yet you're an important machine. You show everybody. You take it and say, all right, Doc, I'll lay off this. I won't take any more hills. In other words, I won't eat any more steak. I won't do this. I won't do that. I won't do the next thing. I've had a fellow tell me not so long ago that he was allowed to do this and allowed to do that and allowed to do the next thing. He says, gee, Doctor, I'm all right as long as I don't do all of those things. I say, well, what the hell do you want to live for? He was so restricted, he was able to quit the job and try to live it all. But anyway, those things are merely mentioned and given to you as a matter of food for thought. To climax my point, to understand this simple little truth is to understand the keystone, the plan, the blueprint of normal, natural, healthy life, successful, and happiness. And that is this. Every tissue cell in your body must perform its normal, natural work. And will do that work if the power which animates it can reach there to dictate its function. The only time it cannot do is when that power can't get through. I'm speaking right now of an individual that came rushing to my office just the night before I came here to your city. It was rather a very hasty invitation that I received, and I had to make some hasty arrangements to get away. This gentleman, being most enthusiastic about the work of chiropractic, being most concerned about the sick people of the world, came rushing to me and he says, Doc, is this talk that you're going to give going to be broadcast out there? I said, no, I don't think so. He said, well, listen, Doctor, I wrote out a story. Won't you be good enough to come out there and read this story to these people? Will you let them know just what I want them to know? Well, I looked at the script, and if I were to try to stand before you and read that, I'm afraid that we have to stay here for some time because it was page after page. Before I go in, however, I want to give you the synopsis of the story, but before I go into it, I want you to take his name, if you're so inclined, and want to know. Because here is his true story and true request. His name is Harry Ryan, and he lives at 90-12, 102nd Street, Richmond Hill, Long Island, New York. His story was along this particular line. He, like countless millions of others out there, when someone was ill in his family, subscribed to the only known method of healing that he knew, called in the family doctor. This boy, at the age of 7 at that time, took ill with an illness that baffled that family doctor. And another doctor was called in, and soon another doctor. The boy continued getting worse. Finally, they decided on hospitalization. The boy was taken to the hospital. Specialists were called. Operations were decided upon. In all, he had 4 of them. They drilled a hole behind the ear, removed great part of the lower part of the skull, caused us to dream. They cut a hole through the trachea. They had to feed him that way because of paralysis in his throat. They cut into the abdomen to remove and drain certain parts there. In all 4 of them. And in that period of time, I'm just giving you some options. Try to go through it briefly. That boy was sick for 7 long months. 5 different occasions, the parents were called to the hospital that the boy could have died. Couldn't live. Once more. I could not live any longer, and he's going to die this time for sure because they could not operate on him anymore. They said there's one more operation that they could perform, and that was to remove his left lung. But the boy was too weak to withstand the shock of that type of an operation. And yet, with his lung, he'd have to die because he couldn't live with it being in the condition that was in. 5 different such experiences. 5 times the parents were called upon to suffer that ordeal that can only be understood by those who experience it. In all that desperation, they both being of a religious trend of mind, and when hope had been abandoned, they pleaded with their God. Incidentally, according to Mr. Ryan, they happen to be of the Catholic faith. And as the story goes, Mrs. Ryan made what is known as a novena. 9 trips to her church every Friday. And there on her knees for several hours on that particular day, prayed to her God for guidance, for aid and for strength to withstand the strain of their troubles. And in the end, finally, reconciled that nothing more could be done, asked her God for strength to bear that loss. Pleading, of course, all of the time in her prayers, for divine wisdom to suggest or lead her to something that might save her boy. And if such was granted, she would spend all the rest of her days and all the rest of the days of her husband in paying homage and gratitude to whatever might be that could save her boy. Nothing seemed to be suggested, and nothing happened. Until finally, this being now, according to their story, the last day of that novena. She's going home brokenhearted, yet strengthened, in her staunch and devout belief that, yes, I'm strong enough now, I can bear it. I'm ready for the worst. I drove her and called for little Albert's body as soon as they tell me that the end has come. On her way home, quivering, she meets with a neighbor, a woman she hardly knew. But the neighbor, knowing her and recognizing the anxiety in Mrs. Ryan's face, this woman said, "Well, that's too bad." She said, "What have you been doing for him? You always had the best specialist. We've done everything that money and brains could pay for, and I." The woman said, "Did you ever try chiropractic?" "Chiropractic? No. What do they do?" "My boy has nothing wrong with his spine. I understand they work on the back. My boy's trouble is internally." that has nothing to do with the spine at all. But this neighbor assured her that the chiropractors reached every part of the body through the medium of the spine and the nervous system. Says, why not try it? Well, says I'll give it some thought. Kennedy, she put on her way toward her home to rush the hospital. Suddenly, she tells her story. Oh, she's my novena. Who sent this woman to me? How did she happen to suggest this strange way, a new way of being made well? She ran back to her church and spoke to the priest there. She says, Father, you know my story. You know about my boy, Albert. You know what I've been praying for. A lady just met me in the street and advised me to call in the chiropractor. What do you think? Do you think it's possible that perhaps my prayers are being answered? The priest, of course, and naturally, taking advantage of the fine opportunity, says, why, I shouldn't be a bit surprised. Why not try chiropractic? Oh, your boy is dying. They said he can't harm anyway. There's no harm in trying. That woman encouraged, she went home to her husband and went over to see this chiropractor. The chiropractor, because of the laws of the state of New York, chiropractic not being legalized, if he touches this patient and the authorities hear of it, and the patient dies after he touches it, that chiropractor would be held for manslaughter. No right to touch that dying body or that sick body. In other words, according to the laws of the state of New York and many other states, if the medical profession could not make the patient well, they have no right to live and must die. So the chiropractor explained the situation to these people with a further understanding that if they wanted to try it, they'd have to assume all responsibility. Bring the boy home from the hospital. Tell no one that the chiropractor is going there. Keep it a close secret and just let us see what could happen. With that little bit of hope, they rush to the hospital. The doctors, of course, want to refuse them to allow them to take the child home. They said the child would die in the street. But they said, well, we'll take that chance. What's the difference if it'll die in the street or in your hospital? We want to die home, so it's got to die. They brought that child home, and I want you, ladies and gentlemen, to know this. You have never seen a more horrible sight in your life. To see that mass of bone just covered with skin and nothing else, wasted away to nothingness. The chiropractor gives the announcement. That, ladies and gentlemen, is about 7 or 8 years ago. As Albert Ryan walked into this auditorium tonight, and he looked close at you, you were shocked. He is a giant of a man. He is strength personified. He is all that God intended a young man to be. They say a miracle is performed. No more miracle than the miracle of birth, the miracle of conception, the miracle of changing common food of the flesh and blood. For the first time in all the history of that boy's illness, the pressure was taken off the nerve and life could go through. The damage wasn't too great, and the boy as well. Mr. Ryan came to me and says, Doc, will you please tell them my story? Will you please tell them to know this great fire as I know it? Will you please tell them to go out on the highways and byways and tell everyone they know of the chiropractic philosophy and the results it can produce? Do that for me, Doctor, will you? Why do you want me to do it, Harry? Doctor, both me and my wife, after little Albert was brought home and was made well, we went back to that church. We went down on our knees, and we prayed as hard as we could ever pray. Prayed just as hard then as we did before the boy was made well, and promised God, as a matter of gratitude for saving our boy, we would spend every and make every effort in this world to tell the rest of the world how the truth, the efficacy, the value of chiropractic, and how everybody should have the privilege to enjoy its benefits. So Dr. Icehead gets out there to Washington. That's if I think they wouldn't allow me in the place. But nevertheless, knowing that you're going there, of course it's Washington now. I land in Washington, but in British Columbia. Knowing that you're going there, tell the folks my story, will you? If they question my story, tell them to write to me, will you? If they doubt that, I'll go out there with Albert. I want the word, so I want you to tell the story every time you appear on a public platform. Ladies and gentlemen, that story is gospel truth. That story is just as true as life itself. That same story in the same agony, as described by the lion, right this very moment, is being enacted in countless thousands of homes. In millions of instances, there are people today locked up behind stone walls of steel, hopelessly insane, never to be made well, only because the power of life is shut off in that body. Oh, you don't know how unfortunate and how lucky we are that we can sit here, even though it might be hot, even though it might be a little uneasy to sit here and listen to me shouting at you and speaking with you. But oh, it's such a terribly, terribly worthy cause. It is the most godlike act that you can do in your life. It is giving the power of all creation a normal, natural, even path to express itself through sick bodies. And in so doing, when that chance is given, and that chance is taken advantage of, if the philosophy of science is applied, in millions of cases where there's suffering now, that can be changed from gloom to happiness, from sadness to joy, from a grave to a full, allotted living life. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, think of those experiences put up with that by the prospective mother. All those trying period of time until babies presented to the world. Think of what that child means to those parents. Then visualize some catastrophe, some situation taking place to rob them of their heaven and their all. Them or they can be you or me tomorrow. I know of nothing in this world that is more godlike, that is more natural and more appealing to the human soul and heart, that is more gratifying to the giver of life than to save life and ease suffering. You, patients of chiropractic, won't you please feel the pulse of the wish and plea of the many thousands of Ryans throughout the world? Go to your chiropractor not only for the adjustment. Go there and ask him to give you a fuller understanding of why he's giving you that adjustment. And when you get that fuller understanding, make it your business to become a missionary and tell every sick person in the world that you can meet of this great truth, this great new, and yet as old as time itself, method of restoring sick back to health. In the depth of my heart, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for your time. Do that mission, not for me alone. Do it for the sick of the world, for yourselves. Thank you.
Palmer wasn't going to be here, and I haven't come, I've missed a wonderful address. It is they that are losing out. Dr. Warner, I wish to thank you on behalf of the Northwest Chiropractic Research Bureau and the British Columbia Chiropractic Board for a wonderful address. Good night, folks.